Hello and welcome to the latest episode in the Wolves Fancast series, Stories from the Pack. Just before we get going on today's episode, just really a big thank you to everybody who continues to listen to the Fancast, be it this series, Stories from the Pack, be it our regular series, which is now recorded after each game, and all the spin-offs that we do, and everything you do to help support us. We really do appreciate it. Someone who has been involved with the Fancast as well is joining me today, but on an audio meet, and we're meeting virtually for the first time, but has contributed some articles to the Fancast. And as a result of an article he penned recently around Stories from the Pack, I thought it was a great opportunity to get this next gentleman on to verbalise that story and share with everybody today. And that is Ed Marshall. Ed, how are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you.
Good, good. So me and Ed were just having a very brief chat just before record. So Ed, it's been a mad year for us all in so many reasons. At time of recording, there's localised lockdowns and there didn't seem any let up. How's lockdown been and sort of this year for yourself?
I think for the most part it's been really good. I live now in Worcester, so I've moved out of sort of the Black Country area where I grew up. But I work in Birmingham, so Travelling up the M5 and down the M5 every day, it's nice not to do that. My commute's like 2 yards from the dining room to the kitchen now, so or dining room to the living room, so it's a lot shorter. And me and the wife both work, so it's probably the most extended period of time that I've had with the wife and my little boy, my 5-year-old. But it also has been hard. My mum and dad still live in the Black Country, and they're at the minute they're in the local lockdown. So we haven't really seen them properly for ages. And yeah, so it's been good and bad. It's been good probably for us three, but then when you go outwards, it's been a bit harder. But yeah, quite lucky that I've got a job that I can do from home and all that kind of stuff. So I think I'm one of the lucky ones, really.
Brilliant. But I think, you know, everybody has their own, you know, individual, I guess, story to tell, and one that we know we'll be telling in years to come. And I think we're respectful and we're cautious about how difficult it's been for people. But we also have to realise that there are opportunities, and someone like yourself, you mentioned, you know, you've got a young family, similar to myself, then, you know, you do get that time which you probably wouldn't have been afforded, you know, without the situation as well. So,
I mean, it's also knackering.
Yeah.
I've been way grumpier than probably ever, although the wife might say something different. But so it's been full on. But yeah, it has been good. But yeah, I think I did history at uni, and it's weird to be part of history right now. It really feels like this is something that our kids will talk about, and our grandkids will ask about, and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's weird to, like, and obviously we're always in history because it's just time, but like, this is a really weird point where there's clearly something strange going on that we're now part of.
No, absolutely. Well, we hope everybody listening is safe and well, and we hope in these difficult times as well. Really, this series started, you know, at the start of lockdown, and one of the reasons for that was football was on pause, and it gave me an opportunity to really do something a little bit different. So with that, you mentioned your parents, Ed, and you briefed me, as I say, in the written piece. That, I guess, is where your story war started, didn't it? And was there a case that there could have been a different path you went down with your supporting life? So tell us a little bit about your war story and how that started and how that came about with your family.
So, there's a fork in the road in my family. So one side's gold and black and the other side is blue and white stripes. So my dad is an Albion fan, and my mum is a Wolves fan. And it was just which side do I pick, or which side picked me, I think, which is probably more like it. Closer to my mum's side growing up, so that kind of felt natural that it would go that way. And my dad, unlike me, because I'm forcing it down my little boy's throat that he has to be a Wolves fan, my dad didn't do that with me. He just let me decide. So I think it was just... Yeah, I think it could have easily gone one or the other, one or the other. But really, really chuffed that I went the gold and black route. I can't imagine going the other route. It makes me shudder a little bit thinking about it.
But that's not uncommon, though, is it? You know, as you say, originally from the Black Country, and I think for all the banter and everything that goes with it, you know, workplaces and so forth, that's not uncommon to have that, you know, in a family. I mean, my wife, for example, so her family's all from Halzowing, which is pretty big Albion territory. And her late dad, God bless his soul, was an Albion fan and so forth. And I think, although this is heavy walls, I think, you know, when I speak to people about what we talk about, everybody has an affection for their football club and their story. And it just so happens, as you say, that yours was Wolves. So we'll go on to a moment in terms of some of the games that stand out. But could you talk us through sort of your first memories of Molineux and perhaps where you sat and what was your first experience of the ground?
Yeah. My first memory, I think it was mentioned on one of the other guys, I think we might have gone to the same game, so the Bristol City game, opening game in 1993. Can't remember which guy it was that was chatting about it, but...
Yes, no, it rings a bell.
Yeah, I got my first shirt then as well. And talking about school and banter, being ginger like I am, having a bright orange or old gold shirt. There was some, you only support them because your hair colour's the same, because, you know, 8-year-olds are really, really funny. so, yeah, my first game was Bristol City at home, sat in the Giant Island, as it was then. And we won 3-1, I think. Bully got a couple. And that's just what I thought football games were like. We turned up, the iconic bloke would score 2 goals or do 3 and do his airplane hat-trick celebration. And we cracked on, we went on. I think you've talked about it in the series. There's something amazing about the Molineux. Mm. It really is. And I say that knowing that the biases are going to be there. But you go from, like, I don't live near Wolverhampton. You know, where you had to get the train or the bus down the Birmingham-Wolverhampton New Road all the way into Wolves. But getting off, going under that subway, it's both the best place to be after a win and the worst place to be after a loss, when everyone's so mad or everyone's so happy and it just echoes. And then you've got that city centre feel, and it felt big, it felt special. It's not like an identical ground, and it's just, I mean, it even looks strange, doesn't it? Nothing looks the same. Every stand's different. And it had me straight away, that first game at the Molineux. Anyway, it was just a mind-blown kind of moment of, like, this is special. This is, yeah, I'm glad I picked this one.
Yeah, and you're right, and we have touched on it. As you know, you rightly say, we've talked about it before, but it's worth talking about again because it is special. And I think particularly it's pertinent now when, you know, we're not going to the games even more, so it has an even deeper focus. And I probably am guilty of being a little bit nostalgic, and that's kind of how I live a lot of my life. Yeah. And sometimes I look back at certain things and I go, was it really that good, or is the idea that it was that good more deeper? But I do actually think with the Wolves connection, I think it really is strong. And I know when you put together your article, you talked about the fact that perhaps in recent years, you know, your circumstances dictated that you weren't going, but that first buzz, and I was in the same, you know, there's been financial and personal stuff that I've been away from the team, but even when I've passed it, it's just there. And I think, yeah, there's a mate of mine who's kind of gets frustrated the fact that the ground looks a little bit odd, but I think that has its charm to it as well, because each stand has the sort of, yeah.
It does. So my in-laws, they live in Wolverhampton, so there's always a nice bonus of going to visit them, and we'll pass the ground because they live in Bushbury, so we have to go past it. So it's nice. You just look over, see the strange stands, see the stands that don't fit with the one next to it, but it means something to you because I've sat in all 4 of those stands or stood in the South Bank, which is where I have my season ticket. And, yeah, it just going past it, you have that rush that I think I did on that first game, you know. Yeah, it is special. And I think it's okay to be nostalgic because at the minute we can't even go to the ground even if we wanted to. So it's probably the best time now. It's the best time to put that gold tinted glasses on.
Absolutely, Ed, and I think, you know, we're hoping we can get back when we can, but I think what's unique for somebody of your era and mine, I guess, is very similar, and people listening, is sort of the roller coaster. And I think your first introduction, so that it was Bristol City, and then we talked about the Albion, and they've played a bit of a part in your supporting life, and I think, unfortunately, we've more often than been on the receiving end, and hopefully that'll change soon. But talk to me about your first experience going to watch the Wolves at the Albion and how well that was.
Yeah, so I went to, and I can't remember exactly, and I've never looked it up deliberately because I wanted this to be how I remember it. Mm. I was 4 or 5, and I'm in the Albion end standing, because obviously it was like 89 or 1990, I can't remember. And I'm standing there in between my mum and dad. I can't see a thing. And Bully pops up and either scores the winner or equaliser. But whatever happened, the Wolves end went mental. And everyone in the Albion end, even my mum, who's an avid Wolves fan, was pretending that she was not happy the fact that Bully's just done whatever he's done. And I remember being so angry at her because I didn't get why. Mm. I didn't understand the rivalry. I didn't understand why everyone was so angry. And so, yeah, my first memory of football is going to the Albion, in the Albion end, watching Wolves either win or draw, and Bully scores. And, yeah, even then, by that point, I'd clearly picked my team, even though I was, 4 or 5. So, yeah, I was in the Albion end for a Bully winner or a Bully equaliser right at the end, and I was, yeah, couldn't see a thing. And that my overriding memory is how angry I was at my mum.
Because I suppose, like you say, at that age, it's kind of just a game, and you don't know the darker side, shall we say. I think, I know you said you haven't looked it up, and I was just having a look while you were chatting there, Ed, and it's got potential to have been October 89, and I'll be.
It was definitely cold.
which if I remember, I've seen it on social media, and there is an iconic shot with Bully going to the Wolves end, which I guess would have been opposite to yourself, and the crowd going absolutely crazy. And I don't know about you, I'm just thinking of it now. It's that in this social distancing age, I'm just thinking,
it's flying. like I said, I remember moaning all the way through because my legs were hurting, so I was standing up. And I just, you are so close. And now when you think about it, and you have to be 2 metres away from someone in Tesco, it's probably mental to think about what it's actually like then.
What were your, I guess, or who were your favourite players sort of in those early days, sort of the early 90s and so forth? You mentioned Bully, and by all means pick up Bully, but anyone else that sort of stood out?
I guess probably the early 90s, it probably would have just been Bully, being that age, kind of the number 9 scoring all the goals. It would have been, but sort of moving on, sort of the mid 90s when I started to go a bit more, Neil Emblem was a big one for me.
Oh, yeah.
Because he wasn't very good, but he played everywhere. He turned up every week, and that's the kind of player I like, I think. It's a bit of a football hipster, and I think I was even at a younger age. Kind of like the bloke who played up front and right back and centre back and centre midfield. And, you know, obviously he's a better footballer than I'll ever be, but, you know, he wasn't great shakes, but like he was just, I think he embodied kind of Wolves for me, kind of like that combative player that I don't know where we got him from. I don't know where he went afterwards. I know now he's in America, but he kind of just was in that lovely sweet spot of my memory of someone like Neil Emblem. And it's kind of Tomo as well, banging in the penalties. I always think, how many more goals would Bully have scored if Tomo hadn't taken the penalties?
Yeah.
It would have been closer to 400 probably. But so I think good hard working players for me has always been the one. And like Neil Emblem, Kevin Muscat. I mean, I think I was at that game when he elbowed that bloke and almost killed him. But for some reason, you think that's okay on the football pitch. If someone did it outside, you wouldn't bat an eye, you know, you'd go mental and wonder what was going on. But He got sent off at GBH on someone one week, and it was, I remember being like, that's not a foul. I imagine him with VAR now, he probably wouldn't become a professional.
And I think I've seen him on the touchline now, because I think in recent years he's been managing in Australia as well, and it's still as crazy, and I think he's been in trouble with their authorities. But yeah, Neil Emblin, I remember Neil Emblin, as many will, and as you say, is that utility player playing in every position. A full back up front, and I think we re-signed him. He went to Palace, and then I think we re-signed him again. I remember when he went, I think it might have been part of the Jamie Smith deal. Someone will correct us, and that's fine, because we're kind of reminiscing. But as a player, was just a hell of a player. He was a core hero, and I think we did a piece on him for that, because he was sort of that player who, I don't know, and again, it's been nostalgic with players more relatable then, but you like you say, you know, knowing that perhaps he, you know, we haven't got the talent of a Keane, but Emblin just kind of seemed like a bit of a working class hero, I suppose.
Blue collar, as they say in American sports, isn't it? The blues who probably turned up in his sandwiches in a tin foil, you know, that his wife had made him, and like he just went and played football. So I think that's, players like him, I've always had a real soft spot for, and I think, like you say, Wolves in for our era, sort of the up and down we've had a lot more of them than we have Neveses and Moutinhos, haven't we? So I think it's easier to hang our hats on those types of players and go, what have we got now? But yeah, I think it's good to look back and know that we've had players like Emblin, Steve Sedgley, all these kind of journeymen that did a job when we needed them.
I think you're right, and there's a time and place, and I was just thinking there, if in 10, 15 years' time or 20 years' time, someone will be having this same sort of conversation about Moutinho, maybe they will, and you know, but because, it's difficult when you're in the moment, and we know, and we'll perhaps, before we close the episode, we're not there yet, but in terms of, we'll perhaps circle back to the current, because it has to be talked about because of how bloody good it is. But when you are in the current, I think there is a case for probably not quite appreciating it as much as you do, because you're living it and you're living through it. And that's why we talk about those games. So memorable games. I think Newcastle, you mentioned to me, the cup game was a key one for yourself as well.
Yeah, so it was on TV. I didn't have a season ticket that season we went up, but I'm pretty sure I went to nearly every home game. So I went to that, and it was freezing cold. And being, 17 or 18, I just thought all I needed was my Wolves top and my jeans. And we had everything in that game. And we also had, probably my two favourite players of all time. So Matt Murray and Lescott, and they were amazing in that game. And that was kind of the turning point for us in that season, because that was the promotion season, wasn't it? And something special happened that game. You know, there was Jolie Lescott blocked a shot off the line, then Matt Murray cleared it. Matt Murray set up two of the goals with long throws. We had Ince banging a goal. We kind of had everything. And I think probably, and I said in my article, without stuff to jump around at, I probably would have died of hypothermia, because I was that cold. But yeah, that was a special one. And obviously, it's on Sky. Like, it's not like football now, obviously, when every game's on TV. So that felt special as well. Like, the TV cameras were there. I'm in the South Bank. I'm shouting along, singing along, that kind of stuff. And it's, it resonates. And that was kind of, we brought Irwin and Ince to do exactly what they were starting to do, which was get us to win games. And yeah, that game went off with to a fly, and then Shearer got a penalty, and Dark just after half time, I think it was. And yeah, it was just a ridiculous game, and everything went well. And then also started my complete hatred of Bellingham at the end of it, because pointing at the Premier League badge for some really strange, bitter reason. It was very interesting. The why it really upset him that much, I don't know. That was like the turning point for that whole season, and that leads to, you know, to the game at Cardiff and all that kind of stuff. So that was a special one for me, because it was just sort of it was around my birthday. It was just an amazing game, and it's in that, again, that sweet spot of my age. You know, I'm 17, 18. I've got nothing else going on in my life, so Wolves was everything. and to be that good that season when I could go all the time, it was just, perfect almost.
That's the thing, isn't it, really? And it's an interesting point you make, and something which has kind of been touched on in terms of, you know, when you're kind of at your most invested at a football club, and perhaps before responsibilities and kids and so forth come along, where your time is a little bit stretched, and you're 17, 18, and you're thinking, and this is why, you know, at the moment, for people who are season ticket holders, I really feel for them, because mm-hmm. they will get that time back. But you even if the football's not so good, you're still there and you're still spending that time. And you know, I can kind of put Wolves in a little bit of a box, and I love it, and I wouldn't be talking to you if I didn't, because I do. I absolutely love the club, and I'm sure that comes through as you do as well. But I can kind of put it in a bit of perspective. But there are points in our lives where football is the everything, and it consumes us. And I think, like you say, as a 17, 18-year-old, if you're on the terraces or in those stands and you're kind of freezing your nuts off, it doesn't matter, does it? Because you're in that moment, you're caught up.
Everything, especially that season. It was just before I went to university. Like, pretty much every bit of money I had went into the Wolves. I mean, I was even subscribed to, do you remember those text message services you got when it said Wolves had scored and it cost you like 25p or something? All of my credit was going on back then, because contracts were like something rich people had. I was at a game and it would say so-and-so scored. I'm like, I know I've just watched it, but I'm still getting this text message to tell me it. It's costing me money to watch it twice. But look, you're right. It was at that, just that perfect time when you can just, everything can go into it.
And then we've got to talk about it. I know it's talked about a lot, but your Cardiff experiences, you briefly touched on that. Tell us about that. How was your sort of build-up to the day, and what do you remember?
Well, the build-up to the day was I didn't get a ticket to start off with. I queued up, took the day off work. I used to work at Asda then, stacking the shelves in the butchery department. And it was the Saturday night. I used to work 2 till 10 on Saturdays, which meant that I could only go to midweek games or games that had been for TV. And I had a phone call, and you couldn't, mobiles, you weren't allowed on the shop floor then. And I had a phone call to our like butchery department, and it was my mum saying, Jez Mox is on the phone. I told her, get lost. No, he's not. And what I didn't know is she'd sent an email or a letter. You know, being my mum, she's so meticulous. She'd pointed out all the games that I'd been to and that she'd been to with me. And it was unfair that we didn't get a ticket. And he phoned up and said, how many do you need? We've got X amount. Wow. And I was, no, it's not him. And like, eventually I believed it was. And I think I just talked my credit card details over the phone. The credit card that I was given for emergencies, that was an emergency.
Yes.
So we bought 4 tickets there and then on that Saturday night at like 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So say what you want about Jez Moxey, I love him still for that.
That's incredible. Before you talk about the game and so forth, that is amazing. Yeah. I'm just imagining that call and it's going through to the department.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, we've got a Jez Moxey on the line. It's like, whatever. I don't need this now.
No, I'm already disappointed I didn't get tickets and I lined up for them. So don't wind me up. And then my mum kind of convinced me that it was true. But it covered a lot of Jez's cracks, that did, for the rest of the time that he was with us, because I'll always still remember that he gave me my ticket to Cardiff. So.
He was in credit massively then.
Yes.
For you, wasn't he?
It would have taken more than a pint for me to not like him.
I don't know. Oh God, it's a whole different podcast on Moxey. I liked Moxey, in fairness, because I kind of felt as if, yes, his sort of persona was sort of a very slick guy, very sort of articulate, and he was less of a PR guy in one sense than obviously, you know, one of the leading goal scorers of the club in John Richards, and then people like Laurie. And so I'm not saying, how can I put this? he had Fosen behind him at that time, and he could give tickets out in the Hogshead and so forth. And there were probably times in Jez's tenure where he'd love to do so many of those things.
Yeah, no, It's a very functional period of our lives, wasn't it? As Wolves fans, you know, we had the Mick McCarthy years when he was dragging misfits from, you know, Michael McIndoe and everyone else, and buying Kiteley and for next to no money, and Jarvis from Gillingham. So it was a very functional time, wasn't it? And I think it's very different now. And I wouldn't want to do that job personally. But yeah, like I say, he got me to Cardiff, so I'll always have that.
Brilliant. And then Cardiff, I mean, what can you say about the game, mate?
No, I remember being told to sit down by the blokes behind me, because I think I was in a slightly nicer section than I was used to. And I was too nervous to sit down. And then someone grabbed my shoulders and said, "Any chance, mate?" And I was like, "Oh, sorry, I'm just used to standing up." So I sat down, and then, yeah, we got that first goal. And one of my overriding memories is at half time, the same bloke, and he was just like, "We'll mess it up. We'll mess it up, it's Wolves." And I was like, "But it's 3-0. And he's like, no, we'll still mess it up." And then when the penalty happened, I got the tap on the shoulder, told you. And I was like, but being a Matt Murray stan, an absolute fanboy of Matt Murray, I was like, "It'll be fine." Probably the only time I've ever given my opinion on a penalty. And I was like, Matt Murray, it's fine. Murray will find it. It's not an issue. And he did. And the rest of the game, it probably wasn't even a good game of football, I don't think. When I'm trying to think of good passages of football, I can't think of many, but I don't care. I just wanted us to win. And we got there. And it was, I remember the stadium at the end when it was moving. We got told to leave. And it was just, you've outstayed your welcome now. No one was willing to go. And we drove down as well. And we had some dodgy cars back then. And this car was crunching every time we were braking. There was some noise was coming out of the car, and we were like, I don't even know if we're going to get home, but we didn't care. I think we kind of just got there on willpower and just sheer joy, I think. Yeah, it was an unbelievable game, unbelievable moment. And it's also the same day as my wedding anniversary, which means that I've got two reasons to not forget it. So 9 years later, I got married on the same date, but that was already etched in the brain, so...
Brilliant. A special day. At this moment, we're going to take a short break and we'll have some more memories after this. Okay, so we talked there just prior to the break in terms of Cardiff and some memorable moments in a positive slant. Any particular era or time which you would say was a low point in your war supporting career so far? 6 days.
Probably the worst one was the 5-1.
Yeah.
12th of February, it's my birthday.
Oh, no.
My friend who's a teacher got a good deal. It was a Sunday. Got a good deal on getting married on that day. So I didn't have to go.
Right.
Which is probably the only saving grace. So I remember we sat down to the father of the bride giving a very long speech. At the time, it was around kickoff time. And it was about 3-1 by the time it finished. So my dad was texting me. Although he's an Albion fan, he really, he's not really into the rivalry. Actually, it's Villa he dislikes. So I knew he wasn't winding me up. And then it went to 4-1. And then it went to 5-1. And I turned my phone off, put it in the wife's handbag, and just went, "I'm not looking anymore. This is something else." And that was it. I think that whole period, because I was a season ticket holder for the Mick McCarthy years up until the year we went down. So that team was special for me. And he's probably not most people's favourite Wolves player, but I loved Carl Henry. And the fact that he was part of that bomb squad, him, Kevin Foley, and some of the players that, the functional players that I really liked, the 7-8s out of 10 every week, and how they left the club was that whole period from that 5-1 on my birthday all the way through to, even before the Saunders sort of stole back and debacle was the worst thing. And it was an end of an era, those guys leaving, and the way they did. Roger Johnson, Jamie O'Hara, that's fine. They can come and go, but those other guys, Doyle, Foley, Carl Henry, and all those kind of guys, that they were like who I'd kind of grown up with. I was starting to become a man at this point, and like they were my team that I was going away whenever I could, as well as going to the home games, and like we'd pick them all up. Mick had put this sort of band of misfits and players from Shrewsbury and Gillingham and all the other stuff, and that's probably the low point, is just how that ended, because that was kind of where, like we talked about, my stage in life changed. Got married, going to games was few and far between at that point, so that was a sour note to leave it on, really. A sort of a proper avid going whenever I could, all the time, season ticket, and I think that was the hardest point. And that 5-1 on my birthday was just a proper kick in the knackers. That was horrible.
it was. I went with my dad, and I left before the end, like many did, because it was just tough to take. It was horrible to sit through it. And you make a really interesting point there, Ed, about the McCarthy era and those players, because it kind of felt so strange that it wasn't that distant a memory sort of prior to that, where they were, you know, winning at Barnsley and on the pitch and so forth. And, you know, we were seeing the debuts of Keogh and Edwards. Edward, perhaps not a good example because he stood the course for fantastic reasons, but the players you referenced there, Foley, player of the season, to on squad, you know, and how football can change. And I don't know about you, but, you know, when we talk about the current and how good it is, and it still feels very comfortable to talk about it, to think that it's not going to go tomorrow. But, you know, Nuno talks about being humble, and sometimes I take that on board because I know how quick this game can change as well.
Yeah, that was it was just how unceremonious I think it was. Because these, like you say, we, you know, the Derby game, everyone's on the pitch, you know. But I remember being in the South Bank and people hating Carl Henry passing sideways. And I remember having arguments with people like, well, what is he supposed to do? Because that team was set up to not lose. It's like you say, we can talk like Nuno basically is a defensive tactician, but because he has those players at his disposal, what's the difference with McCarthy? You know, for me, obviously he's nowhere near Nuno's level, but for that job, that was exactly what we needed. You know, when he took over, we were nowhere. We were absolutely nowhere near the next season or the season after being close to the, you know, the season after we were close to the playoffs and the season after we made it. It didn't fit. And just, yeah, the unceremonious way that sort of these blokes that have done like 4 or 5 seasons of proper hard work and giving everything, it felt like a horrible way for it to end. It was kind of a really bad breakup, and I think that's probably it was messy.
It was a good analogy, and I think with Carl Henry, I'm not going to be hypocritical, because there were times where I criticised him. But again, I think it's the benefit of hindsight when you look back and you think of the job that he did. And I think it was a style culture issue, wasn't it, with Henry? I think, you know, I was in the ground many times where we were looking to push on, and it seemed as if it stifled play. But then you cut it a little bit further forward, and you even went to the Sol Bakan era, and then Nuno, as you reference in the current day. If you have players like that now who keep the ball and play possession, and we don't always play the most pretty stuff, but we're afforded the fact that we've got players that, you know, are far greater. So in that time and in that context, when I look back, I think actually I was probably a bit critical, because it worked within what he had, and Henry didn't have the benefit of the players that he would love to have played alongside that are currently in the shirt now.
I think that's the thing for me. I think, again, probably the football hipster in me, I think because people didn't like him, I instantly started to try and like him. And I always saw him as functional. And I think that was the whole point of mixed teams, wasn't it? It was, I mean, if you remember that 0-0 against Stoke when we were like playing for throw-ins.
Yes.
They were playing for Delap.
Yeah.
Ella Kobe, who couldn't throw it as far, but for some reason we thought he could. And we'd play into the corner like rugby. If you didn't support either one of those teams, you wouldn't have watched it. It was definitely last match of the day. But like that's what we did. That's what we did in that era. And that first season, I think we were lulled into a false sense of security when we kind of finished 12th, 13th, whatever it was. And we didn't push on. We didn't sort of make the most. And Mix obviously got his, you know, detractors. And I did disagree. You know, players like Milias and stuff should have played more. But yeah, for me, I think Carl Henry and sort of Kevin Foley and those guys, I think, yeah, like I said, the bad breakup kind of feel that that has to, it's probably one of the low points for me.
And in terms of the current, you know, time sensitive in terms of this podcast from when we're recording it for to when it goes out, but there'll only be a few weeks or grace period. But to talk in general terms, do you still, like many of us, have a sort of a pinch me moment with Nuno and how things are right now?
Yeah, pretty much every week. It still feels strange to me, I think, that we are actually good. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a mindset change that I think I'm dealing with, because it's just sort of a bloody hell, we know what we're doing. You know, these aren't a band of misfits that we pulled together. These are like internationals, and not Ireland and Wales, and no disrespect to them, but like these are people who've won stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that have played in Europe. Like when we got to Europe, mental. Never, ever did I expect us to get there, let alone to do what we did. And yeah, so it is a pinching moment. When we got Nuno, it was kind of a, okay, that's not an experiment. That's not Solbakken, and that's a proven performer. And then when we obviously got Uncle George on board and the players he can bring in, yeah, Neves, that the game against, I can't remember when he scored that screamer. I can't remember who he was now. Was it Hull or someone?
Well, there was Hull away from home, but he's probably his famous one was Derby at home.
Yeah. But when, like you said, that's not Carl Henry, is it? That's a central midfielder that pushes play on, that moves things on, and yeah, it is definitely pretty much every week. It's a pinching moment of not going into a game thinking I'll be happy with a draw, but we should be winning this, you know. And that, for me, after like 35 years of watching Wolves, is a massive mindset change that I think I'm still getting used to.
And I think a lot of us are in that camp as well. And you've probably seen a lot of stuff online, and people talk about, you know, we can't keep saying we're in League One not so long ago. And I get that, and I really do, because that has no bearing on the fact that you don't beat Sheffield United, because, you know, you talk about the players that we've got. And I have to stress this, that we shouldn't apologise for that. We shouldn't apologise that that's where we were. Well, that is where we were. But in the now, and, you know, the way I see football is fluid. So, you know, how it is right now is how it is. And if you've got, you know, players who have won European championships and domestic titles, and you know, then you should be competing, and we shouldn't... Yeah. You know, we shouldn't apologise. I think from a fan, it gives you a little bit of context now in a game, but that doesn't give you a reason why you shouldn't be going out and winning games with the players that we've got.
I don't apologise for where we are personally, because it's one of those ones where you show your stripes, don't you? Like, I've been here when we played Gillingham, and I've been here when we played Grimsby and all that kind of stuff, but that doesn't matter. For me, I think you can't help what era you've grown up in to watch the football and to pick your team. And, you know, Wolves, we've gone up and down with them in the 30-odd years, but I'm more than happy to ride this wave now. This is not something I'm going to apologise for. And I don't think that there's much of a leg to stand on, because I think if you still look at our books, we're balancing them properly. I don't think we're doing what Fulham did a couple of years ago, splashing cash on nobody's kind of thing, and just we have a plan, and there is the club has a plan. And, you know, it was horrible to leave Jota a couple of weeks ago. Probably my favourite player of this era. Just, I loved how he progresses the football. And you don't see that very much, of just someone who just runs almost in a straight line. And So I don't apologise for where we are. I don't think we should do. And I think that, but there's still a soul to this club. Like Blake, the American lad that you had on a few weeks ago, mm. he wouldn't he wouldn't have the affinity he has to this club if we didn't have the heart.
Yeah.
That we can hold on to, that we have. You know, this isn't a carbon copy of an American franchise. This isn't us sort of throwing cash at stuff. There's a process to it, and there's a soul to our club that I think we should be proud of. And we look different. It's a different kit. Our stadium's different. The setup's completely different. You know, growing up, we had players that actually came through and did stuff. Murray, Lescott, Robbie Keane. You know, don't get me started on us selling him to Coventry for next to nothing. So we had like a, we've always had in sort of my lifetime that kind of heart. We had Bully. You know, not many clubs can say they've got someone like that, especially in this era, in like the 80s, 90s, 2000s. His records are kind of like pre-war and post-war, like Jimmy Greaves type numbers, aren't they? But he did it in recent history. And I don't think that should detract from where we are now, because I think we can be equally proud of both.
Honestly, I think that's wonderfully played, and I'm kind of getting goosebumps because, yeah. You know, it makes me emotional even talking about it, and you put it so well there. And I think, yeah, if people are listening to this, we've had Blake on, who's an American guy from California, Ed Reference, and he's one of many who has not bought into, is probably the wrong word, but has kind of found a respect for this club, and he knows the fabric of the club, and he's become the fabric as well. And I think part of that is the fact that we have got a unique story, and we have got an identity, as Ed was so wonderfully put in there, that people are drawn to this club, and it, you know, be it if you're local or you're not, and be it whatever era you're in, if you're coming on board now, or if you've been with this club for many years, there is something about this club, and that's why, you know, I love doing this, because I think we have got a unique story to tell, and I think that those fans, you know, that I'm a part of, and we've had on have shown that, and I think, yeah, this is a fantastic club, and we shouldn't be afraid to shout that. And I think what's great, and I don't think it probably isn't open at the moment, but what I would recommend people to do is to go to the Wolves Museum, for example. If you haven't been, when obviously it's open, because I suspect in these times it may not be, but I'm sure there'll be time to come where we can. And that is an amazing place you can spend your time, because you learn so much about this football club. So if you've only perhaps come on board with this club in the last few years, first of all, you're welcome. You know, we'll welcome you and find out about this club, because as Ed was saying there, each part and each era of this football club plays its own significant part. It makes a hell of a movie, doesn't it? You know,
it does. I think I can't imagine there's many clubs that have players that still have an affinity to it, even if they've not been here long. Like Chris Iwuluma, what, two seasons, and one of those he didn't play. He's still doing things with his club because it means something to them. And I think if Wolves fans, if we love you, you'll know about it. And I think it works the other way sometimes as well.
Oh, yeah.
Just to give it some balance. But yeah, I think when you look down the years of the people that we've had for a couple of seasons, it still means something to them that they played for Wolves, because it's still part of the fabric of football. You know, people know who we are because we are different, because we've been through so many ups and downs, and not like yo-yoing. We've gone like down more than a few times, and people like a plucky underdog, don't they? But I don't think we're an underdog. I just think we're ones that are, yeah, we're you know, God willing, we're going nowhere, and that's kind of a club that you can hang your hat on, I think. And I think that's something that we need to probably be proud of a bit more. I think we don't need to apologise for going down and being the butt of some jokes, and then being the butt of jokes when we're doing well either, you know.
No, absolutely. And you know, it's come through on the episode so far, and you mentioned it in the last sort of passage there, but what it means to you, Ed, what does it mean to you, if you can sum it up, being part of the pack, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, for me, I think there's sort of Yeah, it means probably far too much than it probably should do. Like, my wife has no interest in football. And I think if you try and explain football to someone that doesn't like it, it makes no sense, does it? Watching 22 blokes chase around the back of air and all those kind of stuff. But it means loads. It means so much. And football in general, sport in general, means a lot to me. But Wolves is just, it's like being part of a family. You know, I've shared hugs with blokes I'm never going to meet ever again. I remember, I can't watch penalties. The Villa game, when Ebanks Blake scored a penalty in the Premier League, I walked into the gantry or the tunnel part with this other bloke. We waited for the cheer. We gave each other a hug and we walked off. I've never seen him before, never seen him since. You don't get that in probably any other walk of life. And yeah, I think after sort of, my faith, my family, and then it's football. I think it's the three Fs for me. I think that's how serious it is for me. And I think that's how much it means to me. It's sort of a fabric of who I am. It's in my family and it was passed down to me, but I think it's more than that, because I don't think it's something that you just sort of do half-heartedly if you're doing it properly, for me.
No, brilliant. And I think that's, you know, a perfect way to close, Ed. Thank you so much for sharing your story. It's kindly contributed to the Fancast and hopefully continues to do so with some great articles, which will be on our website. We've got a lot of stuff going on with the Fancast at the moment. We've got this series, as I've mentioned, sort of in the introduction. We have our regular podcast, which we're looking to do sort of post-match now to give you that instant reaction. We've recently launched a YouTube channel, of which you may be watching ourselves here. Apologies on the lighting. We can't afford one of those Instagram sort of, blogger things. And I'm working on my backdrop at the moment, which is very bland. You've got some flowers.
There's some twigs, which apparently make the room look nicer.
We've got lots of different content on lots of different platforms. From both of us, thank you for listening, and we'll see you soon.
This is what renting furniture with Feather looks like. Pieces that fit your style and your space. And cost less than your monthly phone bill. Oh, and did we mention delivery and assembly included? Feather. Start renting at livefeather.com.